Well, good evening, everyone. Happy Monday. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. I'm proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, we kick off this week by talking to Sean T. Smith. He is a Florida guy, so I'm really happy to talk to him, particularly because he's originally from Miami, where I am originally from. Sean and I first met when he was a writer in the Crusade Collapse Kindle Worlds done by Steve Conkley, and he was really terrific on the show. Since that time, he's gone out and he's written his own set of literary thrillers. Very interesting books. I think you're really going to enjoy talking to him. But it was so funny when I was reading his bio. He said he moved to Nashville after sporadically attending college at University of Florida. Now, if any of you know about Gainesville, it's a very small college town. The town really is made up of everything centered around either the hospital up there, Shands, or at University of Florida. And it is a party town, so I can understand the sporadic. However, Sean tells me that he was very alarmed to discover he was not the next Garth Brooks. I'm sure Trisha Yearwood is probably thrilled about that. I can't wait for you to talk to Sean. So let's welcome him into the air. Sean T. Smith, welcome to Authors on the Air. How are you, Sean? Long time no talk.
I am fantastic, Pam. It's great to talk to you again, and thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. What's new and exciting in your world? You are back living in Florida now, up at the north end of the state. How is life up there?
It is fantastic. Now I go to the beach, I walk in the woods. We just spent some time up in the Anastasia Islands over by St. Augustine with the kids this weekend. It was just wonderful. Great place to live.
You know, Sean, I'm always impressed because every time I speak to you, you always talk about your family. You really, really enjoy hanging out with your family, don't you? And it's a very rare thing these days to have someone who actually says that. So I think that's really cool. Thank you for being a good dad.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm not sure that I live up to the but I certainly try.
Well, I have always said that family is your first priority, and as a matter of fact, I noticed that when you write, your themes are struggle, redemption, family. There's dark and light, and even in this trilogy that opens with Objects of Wrath. Can we talk about that book for a few minutes, please? And let listeners know a little bit about the story, will you?
I would love to do that.
Okay.
So Objects of Wrath was my first novel that I actually finished and published. And the novel, the series itself takes place over about 40 years. And it's the story of World War III and what happens as a family tries to survive. So it spans four generations. And it starts out with a protagonist that's a teenager and he grows to be a man. And by the end of the series, he's a father and perhaps a grandfather.
Wow. You like those themes, don't you?
I do. You know, I write characters that are idealized versions of the man I'd like to be. So my heroes are truly heroic, I think. And maybe a little bit over the top. You know, they have demons, they have battles, but they are truly good people. They're family men and women.
That's fiction. That you can have them a little over the top because it's fiction. But I get the sense a lot of your characters are a harken back to the pioneer days. Have I missed the mark on that? They're struggling to make their way in a world that may not be all full of goodness and light.
Well, sure. And you know, I write post-apocalyptic thrillers and military thrillers, and I think that the pioneer spirit is who we are as Americans at our heart. It's what shaped us. It's what shaped our country, and it's what shaped our individual ideals, that sense of rugged idealism. Individualism is part of our collective psyche, I think.
Yes, yes. So the first book starts off spanning the 40 years, but you've written also Children of Wrath. May I assume that that's the next generation?
Well, yeah, so Objects of Wrath only spans about, it's about 10 years. And, yeah, the Children of Wrath picks up about 10 years after Objects of Wrath left where it left off. And so, yeah, children is a big theme of the book. You have some terrible tragedies, and the next generation is essentially passing the baton. And the survivors of the fall, as it's called in the novel, really have to figure out how to cope and rebuild society.
Now, you have yet to release the final book in this trilogy, if my understanding is correct, and that will be Wrath and Redemption.
Oh, no, that's out. Yeah, it's out.
Oh, it is out now. I'm sorry. So
yeah,
does this...
Sure,
yes. Does this answer all the questions, or do you leave a little bit kind of left to your reader's imagination?
No, in the final book, I really I broaden the canvas. The first two books are focused on the United States and one individual's family's struggles, but by the third book, it's global in scale. I have a protagonist in Russia. There are scenes in Africa, the Mediterranean, and in Europe. So you really have a sense of what happened, and a lot of the questions from the first two books are answered. And I think I wrote a satisfying conclusion to the trilogy. I'd like to think that.
So, which brings the question to mind, how do you do research when you're looking at a global book, a global setting and world building for the final book? I know Google is a writer's best friend. Have you had the opportunity to travel to any of the places that you mentioned, or do you feel that's even necessary to write the book?
That's a great question. I marvel at the internet and the wealth of information that's there. And I think, boy, I can write stuff so much faster than someone could have 50 years ago who didn't have the benefit of all this knowledge at their fingertips. That said, I like to write what I know in terms of locations, in terms of smells and sights and feel. So my tendency is to write primarily places that I've actually been. And so there's a common theme in my books with Rocky Mountains, with South Florida and the Everglades, and the backcountry and the ocean, all things that I know very well. Now, when it came to Siberia, 40 years from now after a nuclear war, I had to rely on Google and some conjecture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have an interest in traveling, Sean, to any of the places that you write about, even though they're futuristic? Do you someday wish to walk in your character's footsteps there, in any of those places?
Not really, to be honest with you. I wrote about Italy and Switzerland. I would certainly like to go there.
Sure.
But in terms of the Far East and Magadan and the far reaches of Siberia, no, not so much.
Yeah, I hear that. Are you a very dedicated writer? Do you sit down at the same time every day and write, or do you structure your time into your day between whatever else you're doing and say, this is my writing time and I'm going to sit down and just do it? How does that process work for you?
I am a horrendous role model. In terms of being a productive writer, I'm all over the place. Ideally, I would write for probably 6 hours a day. I'd write, early in the morning and then write again later on. But because I have a day job, it's sporadic. So I'm a binge writer. I really like to just dig in and crank out, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 words in a sitting.
Wow, that's a lot of words.
Yeah, that's my favorite. I just love those days. You know, I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and 4 cups of coffee and, you know, 2 more pots, and I just write.
You're in the zone.
It just makes me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it makes me smile.
Well, hot damn, good on you. Your latest book, the most current book that you have right now, is Tears of Abraham, and it is not the same book, but it is. Again, another look at what happens when there is when we have a broken country. Tell us the elevator pitch on this book, and take your time, because I really want to know about this book a lot. I know that Steve Conkley reviewed it and raves. He said it's a frightening look at a nation torn apart by a not so distant civil war. So let's talk about that. Tell us the elevator pitch first.
Well, the elevator pitch is that a civil war is not far off, and it's not something we want, and the people that are screaming for it don't understand what that war means. And this book illustrates what it really looks like from the ground up.
And you're speaking about
the short
country
answer.
You're talking about in America, in the United States.
That's right.
Are
within the U.S.
Okay. Uh-huh. And what is your perception of that, and why do you feel like that? You know, I want to explain to everybody, first of all, Sean and I talked briefly before the show. These are issues that he wants to talk about, and you are welcome to join the conversation by calling in at 347-633-9609. He has some views about it, and he wants to talk about it. And, you know, I'm all about listening to authors. So let's hear your take on why you think it's coming. Because you don't say that as a prelude to the book. You say it as a prelude to what is happening in real life, I'm assuming.
Well, the book, I wrote it for fun. But it's also very much a cautionary tale. And I had the idea for the book when I saw a Secede Now bumper sticker in the neighborhood that I used to live in. And it just really ticked me off. And I thought, what in the world? And I thought, well, that's a good idea for a book. And I did some digging, and I saw that back in 2012, Texas had this ballot initiative for secession, and it started to make sense to me. And so now here we are, 2016. I started writing the book a couple of years ago, and it's scary how things are lining up. So the premise of the book is that the Democrats do in fact win this next general presidential election, mm-hmm. and they win again because, you know, demographics are changing. The GOP right now is floundering, and so that's not a far-fetched prediction, I think. And so then what happens? Where does all this anger go that is pervasive in the country? It's people on the left and in the right. People are ticked off. They feel disenfranchised. There's a lot of rhetoric out there, and it's only going to get worse.
I'm agreeing with you. There's a lot of rhetoric. A lot of anger.
Yeah, there is. And it's only going to get worse.
You know, how do you identify where all that anger comes from? Is it the populace reacting to the divided Congress? Is it the rich versus poor? I don't think it's North versus South anymore. That's an old thing. So, you know, where, in your opinion, where do you think all of this anger started? I think we're seeing it come really into focus in more than we ever have. But where do you think, in your opinion, did all this start?
Well, it started a long time ago, way before my time. What we're seeing now is divisions along the racial fault lines, religious fault lines, political parties that are morphing and changing. And essentially you have a populace that feels not represented. And the media leaps upon this and pours gasoline onto the fire because they want to sell advertising. It's good advertising. And they make everything as sensationalistic as possible. And it feeds upon itself. It's like the Dresden firestorm, sucking the oxygen out of everything. And I really think it's going to get worse as we see the lines in this next campaign being drawn. Whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, it's my hope that people just kind of stand back and go, what the heck, man? We deserve better than this as a country. We're better people than this.
Do you think we're doomed to have cycles of civil war based on economy and class and the haves and have-nots and racial divides and so on?
No, I don't think that we're doomed to it. I think that you can, as a nation, there can be convulsions and there can be a renaissance and there can be restructuring all within a given political system. I don't think that you need a revolution. And if you notice, Bernie Sanders is talking about a revolution and Donald Trump is talking about a revolution. So you have both candidates there talking about a revolution. Then you have Hillary Clinton talking about almost a revolution. But either way, you're talking, there's a whole lot of inflammatory rhetoric out there. And it's frightening because you see violence in the streets. You look at the Trump rallies where you have the Sanders supporters clashing with Trump supporters. It's frightening. And I really believe that after the election, should the Democrats win, and it really looks like they will just based on demographics, you're going to have a whole lot of people that are just really angry and fed up. And God forbid that the GOP tries to take the nomination away from Trump. Those people are going to be enraged.
It's an interesting thing that's happening in politics these days. I'm trying hard not to say anything. It's just too difficult a concept to have a civil discussion with most people, and certainly social media is not the place. I appreciate the fact that you're very level-headed about discussing what is happening. But going back to your books, it does give you a lot of fuel for fiction, does it not?
Absolutely. Right now, I don't know if folks have seen, but just in the last week, there's a measure in Texas, again, to secede, and this time it's gained even more traction. So this is not something that's just tinfoil hat conspiracy theory stuff. This is a serious discussion that's being waged by those in power. There are politicians weighing the pros and cons of it. And right now, it's not going to happen next week. It's not going to happen this year, I don't think. But the seeds have been sown. And should that happen, the question I pose in the book is, what does it look like? Is it worth it? And I hope that readers will come away with a resounding, heck no, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's my understanding that you have finished your fifth book. Will this be a continuation of Tears of Abraham?
Well, no, Tears of Abraham is my fourth novel. I'm almost finished with my fifth book, and it's completely different. It's frighteningly different, in fact.
Okay.
A complete departure.
Okay, so it is another standalone. Then
the one I'm working on now, yes, and Tears of Abraham is a standalone, although I've left it open for a sequel. I've been approached about it. I may do that.
I want to make a note, tell you something that I noticed. Your book covers are really, really nice. They're very well done. Who is your jacket designer?
I've had more than one. Christian Bentelain, I believe, was my last designer for Tears of Abraham. My publisher, Post Hill Press, for that book lined that up. And Roy Migabeau did my first three covers for the Wrath series.
They're just remarkably beautiful covers. They're very well done. I'm particularly fond of Tears of Abraham. I like that cover very, very much. And congratulations on it. I want to just take a moment here to mention that Sean is going to take callers. You can give us a ring at 347-633-9609. He's willing to talk about politics. I'm not going to. I just love to listen because I'm not an expert by any means. And we'll talk about books, too. So give us a call at 347-633-9609. This is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. My guest is Sean T. Smith. He's been a guest with me a couple of years back when he was a contributor to the Persian Collapse in Kindle Worlds. And since then, he's taken up writing almost full-time. It could be full-time even though you have a day job, and have some really wonderful books out. There is a trilogy in the Wrath. It's called the Wrath series. The first one is Objects of Wrath, Children of Wrath, and then Wrath and Redemption. I love the titles. I love the concept of them. These are post-apocalyptic, just probably dystopian in the near future, after World War III. The current book is Tears of Abraham, a standalone. Are you interested in exploring any other genres besides the one you write in, Sean?
I am. The novel that I'm working on right now is really hard to define, but it's the hardest thing I've tried to write, and it's a lot of fun. There are a lot of Christian themes in my book, and that's browned off some readers, and I accept that. The titles to the books themselves have Christian references in them. Objects of Wrath is a reference to more than one Bible verse. And Tears of Abraham refers to not only President Lincoln, but also Abraham in a biblical sense.
Sure.
But I really strive not to hit people over the head with the religious stuff. I kind of leave it open, like, here it is, and this could be one thing or not.
Sure.
Yeah,
leave it up. Hi, you're live on the air with Sean. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Jamie, and I'm a friend of Sean's. Actually, I'm calling from Canada.
Well, hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's very exciting to hear you interviewing Sean. I've been friends with Sean for a number of years. I'm a fellow writer. We started out with the same publisher, and I wanted to mention, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about with Tears of Abraham is it continues a theme that I've seen in Sean's writing, and that's the theme of America. Although I'm a Canadian, I'm kind of a student of Jefferson and very fond of the U.S. And I thought that, you know, this would be a great time for me to pose a question to Sean about the upcoming election.
Sean can hear everything you're saying, so just go right ahead and have your conversation. Go ahead, Sean. Say hello to your friend.
How you doing, Jamie? Ladies and gentlemen, Jamie Mason. Good man, great writer.
There you go.
As very, very kind of you to say. But just to kind of keep the focus here on yourself and your own work, I wanted to ask a question which has to do with Tears of Abraham. Thinking back to the history of the United States and the elections that you guys have had over the course of the last 200 or so years, it seems to me that each election poses a kind of a question to the United States. And that question is always sort of a variation on, you know, who the United States wants to be going forward. And I'm curious if, you know, as an American writer, what's your view about what is the question that's being posed with this election, and what do you see as some of the resources Americans can use to ponder solutions to that question?
Holy cow, Jamie.
Yeah, that's a biggie. That's a biggie, Jamie. It certainly isn't mainstream. It's certainly not mainstream press, that's for sure. Because, as Sean has mentioned before, it's sensationalized and, you know, blown out of proportion and all that. We know that. It's not social media. We can tell you what it's not and where you don't want to go. So education is a really big thing, wouldn't you say, Sean?
Absolutely. I think this election is about more than one thing, but
sure.
A common thread on both sides is the real element of anti-establishment.
Boy, you're not kidding.
And so I think that that's really, really the question that the election is posing is, are we willing to continue within the political system as it is, where you have a tremendous amount of money flowing into politics, determining the outcomes of elections in most cases, or are we going to buck that? And in doing so, are we willing to take the consequences? And frankly, that's a scary thing, because I'm not sure that the candidates we've got are the ones best served to answer that question for us.
Jamie, let me ask you this. Do you think there's too much money in American politics?
Well, I'm very reluctant, you know, as a Canadian to criticize, you know, the way Americans choose to do things.
We won't come after you, I promise. We're not going to send the hit squads after you. You get to say your own opinion, and it remains your own. I don't even know your phone number because you're calling from a Skype phone, so don't worry about it. When you look at the amount of money that's poured into political campaigns and into politics in general, what does that say to you?
Well, it says to me that, you know, people are spending an awful lot of money to achieve something. And I think what they're seeking to achieve, really any politician is seeking to achieve impression management. What they're trying to do is they're trying to frame an issue and they're trying to give you an impression of the way things are. And there's a very interesting point here. If you study people who are cluster B personality types, psychopaths, mm-hmm. Sociopaths, narcissists, one of the things that they excel at is perception management. You know, they manage impressions in their everyday lives. And so, you know, I can't really speak to the issue of political funding in America because I'm not even sure I really understand it. But one thing that I will say is it seems to me that, you know, Americans and Canadians need to kind of figure out where are they getting their information and how vested an interest do these politicians actually have in telling the truth?
Well, isn't that the $5 million question? I think you said it very succinctly for a man who's not an American. I want to thank you very much for calling, Jamie, and I hope you send me a message so I can see who you are on Facebook, and perhaps one day you'd come on the show, even with Sean, come back.
Hey, that would be my pleasure, and Sean, it's good to hear you, man.
Good to hear your voice, brother.
All right, we'll be in touch, and
thank you.
You have a good remainder of the show, guys.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Have a good evening. Bye. Nice. Interesting to hear somebody else's perspective. What's next for you? You're going to continue working on book number 5, and you have a plan for book number 6, but also something interesting is going on. What is The Seed?
That is a post-apocalyptic video game that I've worked on. It's through an international company, and it's an intriguing premise. It's a very different idea. It's essentially a 2D graphic novel with branching storylines. So it's kind of like back in the 1980s, you had the choose-your-own-ending comic books.
Right.
And so this brings that to life in a video game format. The Nikolai Arayo, he's the CEO of the company. He did photo shoots all over Eastern Europe.
Wow.
And so the game takes place in Eastern Europe, in Russia and Ukraine. It's a fantastic game, very gritty, violent, and grim. But they're planning three releases for the game, three different acts.
Congratulations. When will we be seeing the seed?
Well, the writing is finished, so it looks like it's going to be released this summer, late spring, early summer.
Wow, congratulations. It's wonderful. You're kind of branching out there, aren't you?
Well, you know, I poke my toes into the water where I can because I love to write. And so when I can get paid to write, I do it.
Yeah, I don't
think
blame
that
you.
I think folks will really dig that video game. Fans of post-apocalyptic fiction will really enjoy it.
Huh. It sounds interesting. Although I've never been a gamer, my eyes don't follow that fast. I couldn't even do Pac-Man when it came out, so that's the thing about it is. However, I will read your books because you've so generously given me a Mobi files for them. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I just want to let everybody know, tomorrow on Noir on the Radio, it's the Dames in the Dark Flash Fiction Throwdown with guests, host Marietta Miles and Michelle Turlick Eisler. It's going to be fun. On Wednesday, Jackie Garlick is going to be with me. She writes young adult, new adult, steampunk and romance. And then Friday, the man comes back, Russell Blake on Authors on the Air. You know, I have no idea what we're going to talk about because he kind of takes over the show anyway. It'll be fun. Tonight, I've been chatting with author Sean T. Smith. I urge you to go to his website at seantsmithauthor.wordpress.com. It's a lovely site. It's not cluttered. You can easily see what Sean is doing and read all about him. Will you come back sometime when you've got another book under your belt, Sean, and tell me all about it? And also tell me when the video game is released.
I would love to do that, Pam. And I appreciate you having me on the show.
It is my pleasure. I've honestly enjoyed the conversation. I've not spoken politics so much in one day in all my life. And I'm glad it was you who was not ranting at me. Thank you for that. That's it tonight, everybody. Thank you to Sean T. Smith, my Florida author friend, who's kind of north and east of me, very far north and east of me, but a pleasure all the same. Thanks, Sean. Have a really great evening, and I appreciate you being with me.
Thank you, Pam. Be blessed.
Good night. Thank you. You too. And thanks, friends, and I'll see you tomorrow night. Thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.